Once a month, my dogs get a box filled with special surprises. Inside are two or three healthy treats and two or three unique dog toys. I'm talking about BarkBox. Starting at $21 a month for the big dog box, BarkBox delivers a box full of joy right to my front door. You can get a 1 month subscription, which is one BarkBox, 6 month or 12 month subscriptions. Shipping is free inside the contiguous United States. When you're a new subscriber and use our special link, BarkBox.com/GreyhoundNJ, BarkBox will donate $25 to Greyhound Friends of New Jersey. Remember, BarkBox.com/GreyhoundNJ. Treat your dog while helping a greyhound still waiting for a home.
Hello, and welcome to the About Greyhounds podcast, the show about greyhounds. What else? So we get a lot of questions in our organization about something we have called the Prison Foster Program. I can tell you that it's award-winning and that this year, 2017, we are celebrating the 15th year of this very successful program. So to answer the questions that we've gotten over the years on this just unbelievable program is Sue Smith. Sue is on our board of directors, and she is also the leader of the Prison Foster Program. Sue, welcome to About Greyhounds.
Well, thank you.
So before we get started talking about the Prison Foster Program, I just want to talk about you for a little bit. Can you tell me when you first became involved with Greyhounds and Greyhound Friends of New Jersey, and when about that led to becoming a part of the board and then finally the executive board?
Jacqueline, I read an article in the paper one Sunday about Greyhounds, and it dispelled a lot of the myths that I thought that like they needed a lot of exercise and everything, and it would never be a dog for me. And I went to a couple of meet and greets and learned more about them, and then decided I had to wait because it wasn't a good time with my job and everything. The dog would have been by himself too long, and I didn't think it was right. And then all of a sudden I changed positions at the prison, and I was back working closer to home. Next thing I know, I adopted my first greyhound, which was about 15 years ago. I was asked to take over the prison program after I was with Greyhound Friends about 2 years, because I had the background with the prison, and people were a little afraid of taking it over because they didn't know what it was about. And it's about 10 years now since I've been on the Board of Trustees.
Oh, wow. And then more recently, I think in the last two, maybe 3 years, you became a member of the executive board, correct?
That's correct.
Great. Yeah. And Sue, I believe you serve as the treasurer.
Correct.
Okay, good. And you mentioned that you worked in the prison. What was your role there?
I started over 25 years ago at Rahway Prison. Worked at our training academy, made sergeant at our sex offenders unit, and I never worked at Mountain View where the prison program is, but because I had the security background, it was just easier to acclimate to going in and out of there and getting the dogs what they needed without compromising security.
Mm. And wow, I hadn't realized you worked at Rahway. Many people know Rahway from the very famous documentary Scared Straight. And yeah, that looked like, one very seriously tough prison.
It's interesting to say the least.
Yeah. Yeah. So, wow. So a pretty colorful career in the prison, or I should say correction system. So congratulations on that. And also congratulations, as I mentioned, this is the 15th year of the program, and it's been very successful. So we'll get into talking about that. Can you talk to me about how the Prison Foster Program came to be for Greyhound Friends?
Okay. I I got most of my information on the beginning of the program secondhand. But Joe Rizzo was the administrator at the time. Joe had a greyhound. And he went to one of these corrections conferences, and there was a presentation at this conference about the Kansas program. And it was the Kansas Greyhound program that was running at the time. I believe Kansas was one of the first ones to do it. I couldn't swear to that, but I think. They did this presentation. Mr. Rizzo came back as the administrator of Mountain View and said, you know what, we could do that here. And he got in touch with Barbara Wicklund somehow, and the rest is pretty much history. The program started out with 3 dogs, went to 5 dogs. It was at 7 dogs when I took it over. We went to 11 dogs, and we can now do 15 dogs. At any one given time up there. So that's 15 extra spots that we don't pay kenneling for.
Wow. So what was it that intrigued Mr. Rizzo so much about bringing greyhounds into a prison? Like, what was in it for him and the actual prison?
Well, from what we know, is that it costs the prison that's doing the program, whether it's us or somebody else, it really costs the prison nothing. What they get out of it is they get the fact that we're occupying, like right now, we occupy 30-plus inmates when we're running full up there with 15 dogs, because each dog has a handler and a backup.
Okay.
And there's always some trainees sitting in the wings for when the guys get out or leave the program for whatever reason. So it's kind of a win-win. There's less problems out of the guys that have dogs because they don't want to lose the privilege. And the dogs get all kinds of socialization. They get, the officers come to see them, civilian staff comes to see them. There's 30 plus inmates in the cottage that handle them. They sleep right in the cells with the inmates. So it's just a win-win program.
Got it. Okay. And tell me a little bit about the facility where the program is. I know it's called Mountain View Youth Correctional Facility. So what's it like there? And you had mentioned 30 inmates involved with the program. About how many inmates does this facility hold total?
I believe they house around 700 if they're full.
Oh, wow. So it's a pretty large organization.
It's a pretty big place. Yeah. They're divided up into individual buildings, and if you saw the place, like, from a helicopter, and you were dropped in the middle of it, you would almost think like you were on a college campus sorority row or something.
Okay.
Because there's a nice field of green, like, grass in the middle, and there's buildings on both sides of it, and they're nice brick buildings that were built, oh, I can't even remember when the place was built, but if, looking at it from that point of view, you would never realize you were in a prison until you come in from the outside and you see the razor wire and the fencing and everything. It houses inmates 17 to 26, somewhere in that genre.
Okay, so that's where youth comes from.
Yeah.
Okay.
And they're charged as adults, and that's why they're at Mountain View.
Okay. And correct me if I'm wrong. I've heard this, that the charges that they have been convicted of are nonviolent offenses. Is that right?
Kind of.
Okay.
Yeah, kind of. It depends on what's on their... They look at the big picture, is what they do.
Okay.
And they look at their history when they go before the board to decide what institution they're going to.
Got it. Okay. And what kind of screening process would an inmate go through, or what kind of prerequisites are required of that inmate to be part of this program?
All right. To be part of the program, They have to drop what we call a slip to say they want to be in the program. And once we have enough, we sit down and we do interviews. It's usually myself, a sergeant, and an officer.
Okay.
And we look at their background, and we see what issues they've had since they've been in the institution. We look at what got them there. And you kind of get a, when you work with inmates over a long period of time, you get a feel for who's playing the game and who's just doing this to get in, to get a room, because most of the inmates in the program are single cell. They're not in a dormitory.
Okay.
So we interview them, and based on the three of us, on our thoughts and everything about it, we either accept them or we deny them. They have to be charge-free. They can't have any charges while they're inside. If they get in trouble while they're in the program, they get ejected from the program.
Okay.
What else?
Well, so once they're accepted into the program, then is there like a wait list for them to get into training and then get into the, I don't know what you'd call it, like the, you mentioned cottage, or are there frequent openings where you're able to rotate people into that program fairly quickly once they qualify?
That depends on availability. If the inmates that are in the program have a long time to do, they may be on the other inmates may be on the wait list for a while.
Okay.
If the guys in the program are getting ready to get out, or go to a halfway house, or go to a camp, because they're getting short, sometimes there's a big turnover.
I see.
So what it is it's we train, and when I say we, it's those of us from Greyhound Friends that go in, we train what we call the para pros, which are like the inmates that have been around longer, that we've deemed more responsible. For lack of a better word, like the best of the inmates
okay.
that are doing this. And then we train them. They help train the new guys. And then we do training sessions once or twice a month on various topics of just things they need to know.
Okay. And I'm glad you mentioned the training. So what's involved in the training, and what kind of learning sessions are involved with this?
Well, we go over the history of Greyhounds. We go over where they come from. We go over why they're different from the average dog. We have a couple of guys up there that are very, very good with doing our shy dogs. And the reason they're good with them is because they're a little shy themselves, I think, but they understand the fact that you gotta get down on the dog's level and you sit. We have guys that have hand fed a dog because the dog was too scared to eat out of the bowl.
Oh wow!
Yeah, I mean, so we've had a little bit of everything up there. We have had everything from broken legs to the dogs that were coming in with skin conditions. They get sick just like your dog and my dog does. You know,
sure.
They get an upset stomach. They have diarrhea. So they get the whole gamut. They learn to treat these dogs like they're their own pets.
Okay. So we talked about how they get into the program. What are the requirements to stay in the program? I know you mentioned not having any, you called it charges while they're in there. Is there anything else that's required of them while they're in the program?
No, they can, as long as they want to be there and we're not having a problem with what they're doing, if the inmate we interviewed had 5 years to do, he could stay in the program for 5 years.
Okay.
Which is beneficial on both sides because he moves up as he stays in the program because he learns more and he learns more. Some of our guys have gone on to the outside when they've gotten out to actually work in shelters and kennels.
That's so great. So they really like enjoyed it so much and found it so fulfilling. And because they had now had the experience of being involved in our program, and it sounds like there's some, you know, serious training that goes on with that, they're able to put that on their resume and take it out to, like you said, like the real world and continue this type of work.
Correct.
That's so great. So walk me through a day in the life of an inmate and his dog.
First thing in the morning, inmate's up, dog's up, door opens, dog goes out. It's time to take the dogs out. And that's early in the morning, usually around 6:30.
So are they taking them out on a leash, or are they able to?
All the outs are on a leash.
Got it.
They're leash walked constantly up there, so it's good for us because the dog becomes good on a leash, and that's why a lot of our dogs go to the city without an issue, because they're used to being walked all over the place.
That makes sense.
So they get up, they take them out, just like at your house. First out in the morning, dog goes out, dog comes back in, dog eats.
Okay.
The guys get ready for work or school, because even though they're in the program, it's volunteer.
Sure.
So they get ready for work or school. They take the dog out again. Nice days, we have kennels outside that we can leave them in. Cooler days, rainier days, the dogs stay inside.
So when they're staying inside, are they staying in the cell of their assigned inmate, or where are they going?
It's twofold. There are some inmates that are assigned to the cottage. So some of them come out in the day room and get to stay outside for a little bit in the cottage when that is available. And the ones that aren't are in the inmate cell, just like they're in your house when you go to work.
Okay. So, I heard the word cottage a couple of times, and I'm picturing, you know, like a picturesque cottage. So what exactly is the cottage? What does that look like?
It's got, I'm going to say there's probably 36 rooms. I'm going to say there's 32 to 36 rooms. There's some single cells, there's some double cells. There's a small day, like what we call a day room area.
Okay.
Where there's picnic tables, where they eat, where they watch TV. There's an officer station. So you go in and you go down the hall, and on each side of the walkway, there's cell doors on each side.
Okay.
Okay. So the dogs, it's kind of like, I tell people, it's kind of like them going from a crate to a studio apartment.
Ah, okay.
If you want to think of it in that, because people say to me all the time, are they used to being at home alone? I said, well, kind of, you know, it's small. It's, you know, it's not huge, but it's like going from their crates, which they've been in all their lives,
yep,
to a studio apartment.
So it's not like the traditional prison cell that most of us, like me, would picture, like with the bars. It's more like okay.
No, these have doors, window, like, you know, little windows up top, ventilation, vent on the bottom. So this is a full cell. This is a full door.
Okay. And was the cottage built specifically for this program?
No. We just, like I said, it just worked. I mean, when Joe came back and had this idea, he just kind of picked they had, I think there were 10 buildings at the time up there. And he picked this cottage, and that's where the program wound up.
Got it. Okay. Okay. So, can you tell me, and I hear this a lot, that it's a win-win. You know, it's a win for the dogs. It's a win for the inmates. It's a win for the facility and corrections overall. And it's a win for GFNJ. Like, what's, and I know what's in it for Greyhound Friends. We talked about what's in it for the facility. What's in it for the dog and what's in it for the inmate?
Instead of coming back to an empty cell, the inmate has company. Some of these guys are doing 18 months. Some of them are doing 5-6 years. So would you rather sit in the cell by yourself or would you rather come back and have a dog? They enjoy it. Some of these guys, I believe it's the first time they've ever had that unconditional love. You know, whether they're grumpy or whatever, the dog doesn't care. And because they don't want to get, they don't want to lose the dog program, they don't act out in other respects within the institution.
I see. So in order to stay in the program, they have to be literally on their best behavior.
Correct.
Okay. So it's good to have that incentive.
Right. And then the dogs, I mean, the dogs get attention. I mean, they get one-on-one. They get alone time. They get outside time. They get leash walked. They do get to run every once in a while when the weather's nice. We have a small area that we run them in a couple at a time.
Okay.
But it's, you know, I mean, the dogs get to go visit different places in the prison if the area supervisor calls for them. They just, it's completely different to see some of these guys with the dogs as opposed to thinking they're, you know, when you think of inmates.
So tell me more about that. What do you mean?
They're very caring. They're very gentle. I've had officers tell me, like third shift, we're never in there really on third shift. I've had officers tell me that the inmate's sleeping on the floor. The dog had a broken leg. The inmate's sleeping on the floor. The dog's sleeping on his bed.
Oh, wow.
Even though they're not supposed to be, but if that's the worst thing they do, I'm not really worried about it.
Yeah, so be it. Yeah.
Or he's gone around to count, and he finds the inmate and the dog sleeping in bed. These are things that you just wouldn't expect.
Right.
There's some photos. I don't remember where they are on the website, from an interview we did probably 5 years ago.
Oh, sure. And, I'm familiar with it, yeah.
Just watching the dogs with the inmates in these photos. The photographer was on the money, and he got really good shots. This was an article that appeared in the paper, in a bunch of the local papers about 5 years ago about the program up there.
Okay, and what we'll do, we'll make those photos and that are in the video available when we post this episode. We'll put the link right in the comments so people can see that.
Okay,
great. So we talked about how long inmates stay in the program, and of course that varies. What about the dogs? Like, was there an average stay for the dogs, or does it vary by the dog's need? How does that work?
It varies by need. If it's a dog that needs medical attention, the good thing about the prison program is all three of the vets that we use on a regular basis are within 5 to 10 minutes of the prison, because we've sought them out and found the kind of care we wanted. So those dogs tend to stay until they're medically cleared. Other than that, it's just like going to a foster home.
Yeah.
Some of them hang out for a week. Some of them are there for a couple of weeks. Some of them are there for a month. You know,
right.
there is no definitive answer.
Okay. So what kind of feedback have you gotten on the program from the inmates themselves and the officials at the program, at the prison?
Well, the inmates like it, and for the same reasons as before, they get to come back and have a dog and have company.
Yeah.
And they, you know, they get to walk the dogs, and some of them are very proud of how they've taught the dog to walk nice, and look, this one sits, and this one will give me his paw. Like, they're very proud of themselves and like to show off what they've taught the dogs to do within the training.
Sure, yeah.
And the officials up there, I mean, there were your skeptics in the beginning, and most of them, I believe, have either come around or retired at this point. But everybody's just, it's like the dogs have always been there.
Okay.
I've had administrators come that I've known throughout the years that are now in administration, that are now working, have worked up there, and they're like, I never thought I'd be coming to jail and seeing dogs in jail. But they realize that it makes for a little bit calmer environment.
Sure.
And especially in that cottage.
Yeah, and especially with a breed like greyhounds. I mean, you don't get much calmer than,
right.
than a
right,
greyhound.
Right, exactly.
You know, I want to share a story that, Sue, I've shared with you before. I don't know if you remember it. One day, I was walking my greyhounds, and a woman stopped me, and she wanted to pet the dogs, which, you know, as you know, happens a lot to us when we're walking our greyhounds. And she asked me if I was with Greyhound Friends of New Jersey, and I said yes. And tears came to her eyes, and she said, thank you so much for what you're doing. I said, what do you mean? And she said that her son is an inmate in the program, and that it has completely changed him so much for the better. She said he's back to the son she knew, and it has helped him immensely. And she was so grateful for that. And she said, you know, he's been talking about when he gets out, like you had referenced before, how he wants to work with animals, and it's given him this purpose. And she was just so grateful and so happy that this program was available to her son. And it made me feel good. I mean, I don't really have anything to do with the program except, you know, maybe once in a while I'll get a foster from, you know, that transitions from the prison to my foster home. But, you know, I just loved hearing that feedback, and, you know, it meant a lot to me. And I imagine with all that you invest of your time and your skills and expertise in this program, like, to hear that must be pretty rewarding for you.
It's always nice to hear that what we're doing is noticed. I mean, we do it, and I say we, Greyhound Friends does it because we love the breed, and we know what kind of dogs they are, and we know they make good pets. And it's great when other people realize that too. You know, the program in 2011 won the New Jersey Veterinary Medical Association Hall of Fame Award.
Incredible.
For social program.
Wow. That's quite an honor, and speaks volumes as well about the program. So, Sue, do you ever hear from the inmates who were in the program after they've been released? You had mentioned before that, you know, some of them actually go on to work for shelters and other similar organizations. But again, like, you know, do you hear back from them, say, you know, after time has passed, about how they're doing and what they're doing? And do any of them actually come back to adopt greyhounds from us?
We haven't had any of them adopt a greyhound. As you know, we do take the hound mix that is in dire straits.
Sure.
And one of them got adopted by his inmate once he got out.
Oh, that's so great.
And we have had families of the inmate, because the inmates tell their families about, oh, I got this great dog. Can we? So we have had a couple of families that have adopted the dog.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Even before the inmates got out.
Oh.
We've had officers and civilians adopt them.
Okay. Yeah, how could they not? I don't know how they would resist seeing them every day. That's great. So I know we've been approached by some other greyhound adoption organizations, including one across the pond in England, about our program and what they may need to do in order to start one in their locations. Like, what kind of advice do you have for organizations who may be considering a program like this?
They've got to have people, number one, that are committed to doing it. And that means being able to drop what you're doing if you have to and go to the prison because one of the inmates told the officer to tell the sergeant, to tell the lieutenant, to call Sue because one of the dogs is sick.
Mm.
Okay, and just the way I told it to you, we play telephone. So I don't get to speak directly to the cottage officer. I'm getting stuff second and third hand. So you have to have people that are willing to be able to get there on a moment's notice. You can't be too far from the institution that you're going to use. And you need to do your research and define how the program's going to be run. And I wasn't around for all of that. By the time I took over, that stuff was already in place. And we've had to refine some of the stuff a little bit, but not much. Everything is pretty much Greyhound Friends handles the dogs and any issues. The Department of Corrections handles the inmates and any issues.
Okay. And you know, so you had mentioned earlier, because you had worked in the correction system, you already had security clearance. Is security clearance also required for anyone else involved with the program? Like, say, a dog is sick, someone other than you gets the call, the dog needs to be picked up and brought to the vet. Do those people need security clearance as well?
Yes. They have to fill out a long background investigation. They have to be cleared by the department, and they get an ID, a volunteer ID, that they turn in their license whenever they're going into the jail.
Okay.
They turn in their license. They get the ID. You have to wear the ID whenever you're inside. We have probably about six people, probably about three of us, that are in and out all the time.
So when you
and
say,
then the other
when you
the
say,
other three the other three or four, they pretty much go in and out to do like meet and greets. They take the dogs out to the local meet and greet when Greyhound Friends has a meet and greet in the area.
Okay, I see. And when you say you and a few others are in there all the time, do you mean on a daily basis?
Probably a couple times a week.
Okay. And that's to be,
you know,
like, for what purpose?
Need.
Sorry.
I'm sorry. It depends on need.
Okay. So could it be, like, to bring supplies or vet visits, that kind of thing?
Correct. Like, this week, somebody will be in Sunday to drop a dog off. One of us will be up there Wednesday to pick the dog up to go to get to the vet to be spayed.
Okay.
Somebody else will drop the dog back off Wednesday night or Thursday morning. And then I pop in. If I'm not the one going up there, I'm in once or twice a week just because.
Okay. Well, and as the leader of the program, I would suspect that.
Yeah, because I check with administration. I check with the supervisors, make sure there's nothing going on that we need to address.
Okay.
If we're doing interviews, that's another trip up.
Sure.
If it's the week we're doing class, that's another trip up.
Okay. I see. There's one other question I have, and that is about how the inmates do when a dog gets adopted. Like, for example, I know sometimes, like, say a dog has a broken leg, the dog will be in the prison for its recovery, which can take weeks. So I imagine the inmates get attached. Like, how are they when a dog does get adopted?
They have come to realize, and it's kind of like you with fostering, if you think about it. Mm. They all know the dogs are only there for a short amount of time until the dog can be adopted by somebody, and they know once that dog is adopted, they know that within the next week or so, that they'll probably get another dog.
And would that inmate, say the inmate's dog gets adopted and now they're waiting for a new dog to come in, do they still stay in the cottage or they need to go back to another facility or building?
No, they stay right where they are.
Okay.
Because it's kind of the first floor of the cottage, because these cottages are two floors. The first floor is kind of the Greyhound program, and that's it. So once you're in the program, you're there. You do something that gets you put out, or you choose to leave.
Okay. Okay, got it. Now, I mentioned bringing supplies up to the prison before, so which got me thinking of doing a plug for the prison foster program. I know on Amazon.com, you have put a wish list there for this program, which includes things like dog beds and medical supplies and that kind of thing. Can you direct me to where or what I would search on Amazon to find that wish list?
All right. I just updated it again, and I never remember the exact name of it.
I think it's GFNJ Prison Foster Program.
I think that's how it's listed. We've had some issues over the past couple of months with the list disappearing.
Mm, okay.
And Amazon has no idea why, but we just recreated it. Someone texted me the other day and told me that they couldn't find the address to ship to, which I believe I fixed last night. At least when I tried to do it, it worked. So I'm waiting to see if anybody texts me back that says, no, that didn't work.
Okay. So we'll keep an eye on
anybody
it.
That wants to donate, I mean, if they're not sure what they want to donate, if they just want to, I mean, we get old coats donated. People call me all the time, send me stuff, and that's, or drop stuff off at the kennel.
Mm, okay.
That's another out venue that they can, for our people in South Jersey, they can drop stuff off at the kennel and just tell them it's for us, and then we get it, you know, we divide what gets donated up through the fosters, the prison program, and the dogs that stay at the kennel.
Okay, great. And what I'll also put in the episode description is a link to that Amazon wish list for the prison foster program. And if anybody wants to make monetary donations to the program, I'll put a link up for how they can do that as well. It is such an extraordinary program, and one I know everyone at Greyhound Friends of New Jersey is so proud of. I mean, even just looking at the longevity of this, 15 years, I mean, it's quite a legacy for the people who founded it, and certainly for people like you, Sue, who have been involved with it for at least a decade. And again, as the leader of it, you know, you must be so proud of what has been accomplished and continues to be accomplished with this program. So I thank you so much for coming on and talking to us about the program. If anyone wants to know more about it, as I've mentioned, we'll put links in the description of this episode, or they can simply go to GreyhoundFriendsNewJersey.org or GFNJ.org to read more about it, to see the videos, and if they wish to donate to this just exceptional program. So thank you, Sue, so much for sharing all this information with us. I know a lot of people have been curious about the program, and you've certainly painted a very vivid picture of it for us.
Oh, well, thank you for having me.
On May 14th, Greyhound Friends of New Jersey celebrates the 15th anniversary of the prison foster program, a truly remarkable accomplishment. Since 2002, well over 800 Greyhounds and some hound mixes have been adopted from the program. This includes one of my own Greyhounds, Baron Von Hounds. Running the program takes a lot of time and dedication, and of course, money. To donate to Greyhound Friends of New Jersey, please go to our website at gfnj.org. Click on the PayPal button to donate via PayPal. If you don't have PayPal, that's okay. You can still click on the PayPal button to donate via debit or credit card. You can also donate needed supplies from the program's Amazon wish list. It's titled Greyhound Friends of NJ Prison Foster Program. To see video and photos of the program and a link to the Amazon wish list, please see this episode on the podcast website, aboutgreys.com, or click on the links in the description of this episode. Thanks for listening. This is Jacqueline Howard for Greyhound Friends of New Jersey. Thank you.